Today on Rocking the Suburbs, we enter a brave new world.
Mike, look, I know Jim and Patrick are away, but that's no need to bring out the Phil Collins.
Fair enough. That'd probably result in a dance of death.
Well, welcome to Thursday of Iron Maiden Week. If you've stuck with us so far this week, we're great. It's great to have you with us. I hope you've been enjoying Mike and I's conversation about one of the greatest metal bands of all time. And we're going to continue that today as we get into a new millennium of Iron Maiden and talk about three more of their albums from their catalogue. So, Mike, it's great to be mate, again with you today.
Great to be back with you, Stephen.
Yeah, we're not at each other's throats yet, arguing about what's the right album or the wrong album. So we're surviving the week so far. So we're doing okay, I think.
I think we're of like mind here with much of this discussion.
It's good stuff. Well, we're going to dive straight into the year 2000. So we finished up yesterday on a somewhat downbeat note with probably the two least essential and least loved albums in the whole Iron Maiden catalogue, and you might think, well, was that the end of the band? Well, as we're still here today and we've got tomorrow to come, the answer is clearly not. Because in the year 1999, what happened was that there was Bruce Dickinson agreed to rejoin the band. There was a reconciliation between him and Steve Harris down at a restaurant in Brighton, I believe, if I remember rightly, from Bruce's book, Mike.
I believe so.
And Bruce agreed to rejoin the band only on the condition Adrian Smith would also rejoin the band, which was a highly prescient and excellent decision on his part, in my mind, because it reunited the classic lineup, which produced all those absolute killer albums through the 80s.
But they also kept Yannick Jurs in the band.
They did indeed keep Yannick So instead of having the Spinal Tap lead guitar and lead bass, they had triple lead guitar and lead bass guitar. So how much Spinal Tap do you want? Well, none more is the answer when it comes to lead guitar. How much guitar would you like? Let me just measure you out a length of guitar. But the underperformance and the lack of quality of the previous albums, it would be unfair to lay that at Yannick's door. You know, he's a very good musician and guitar player. He just, you know, he was joining, you know, a band where things were changing and not for the better. You know, same with Blaze Bayley. He was unfortunate, you know, that fell on him. But, you know, if you get the call from Steve Harris to join a band like Iron Maiden, you're not going to go, let me just think about that for a couple of days, shall I? You're like, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. Exactly. I'm running towards the rehearsal studio now, aren't you? I mean, so, but anyway, the main thing is we have the classic lineup, which now includes Yannick as part of that classic lineup, back together. They did some live shows in '99, and that went well enough that we got a new album in the year 2000, appropriately titled Brave New World. And, what's your thoughts on Brave New World, Mike?
Well, I was super excited when this was announced that Bruce and Adrian were coming back to the band. And, '99, they toured with Queensryche and Halford, Rob Halford's solo band. And they came through this area, and that was the first chance I got to see Iron Maiden.
Oh, wow.
Finally, in 1999, I got to see them perform. It ended up costing me quite a bit of money because I bought four tickets and three of my friends bailed and I couldn't get rid of the tickets. So,
oh no!
But didn't matter. I got to see Maiden finally, and Rob Halford was on the bill, and Queensryche was on the bill, and I was excited for the new songs that were part of the Brave New World album, and I was excited that they were back. And you know, it was a spell in the 90s where Maiden was kind of an afterthought. And with Bruce and Adrian coming back to the band, I think they start, you know, this one, it's definitely not a classic Maiden album, but it's the classic lineup playing the best they could with what they had at that point, where they were just coming back together and getting familiar with themselves and starting to, you know, reconcile, and it's still got some classic song, classic Maiden style songs on this album. So I'm a big fan of this one.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike. I think my notes on it were that it's perhaps it sounds like the classic band after, you know, the ups and downs we'd had really since No Prayer for the Dying. But I think there are some real bangers on there as well, but it's, I think in hindsight, it's not quite as good as it was hailed at the time. You know, at the time, I think everyone was so relieved that Iron Maiden were back and were good again. And it kind of sparked a little bit of a rebirth, I guess, in metal, in the mainstream to some degree, because Maiden were big enough. Yeah, they're one of the few bands, you know, like Metallica, who are big enough to, you know, fill stadiums, you know, and draw that's the, they're that level of fandom, and that latent fan base hadn't really, you know, genre music never goes away, it just either becomes more or less popular. So metal didn't go away, but it just wasn't as big as it was in the 80s, you know. And I think that you're right, that excitement about Maiden being back and real Maiden being back.
Yeah, and you know, there's a bit of the nostalgia factor, I think, involved. Mm-hmm. But when the music was released, that nostalgia factor disappeared, and it was correct. Just straight up, yes, Maiden is back.
Yeah, this is not. Here's a new album, so we can go on tour. And I think Bruce alludes to that in his book. I think both him and Adrian, they wanted to keep making vital music, and that part, I think, the reason was that Bruce wanted Adrian back on board, is they work very well together. You know, writing together, you know, and. They both really, he realised, and no doubt Steve Harris had realised in their absence, how key that was to the overall sound of the band. Even if it wasn't the main pillar of the band, it wasn't quite the same without both of them with it in it. You know, and it comes back to the age old thing with bands as well, a bit of, you know, chemistry. You know, you can put all the best players together, you can't necessarily make the same magic though.
Right.
You know, and there's the magic with Adrian and Dave and Bruce and Steve Harris there that just isn't quite there in those other combinations. You know, you put that, you know, you can add the other guys in and they elevate it, you know, like Yannick and Nico, but with those, I think with those, unless you've got those four, it doesn't quite have that same thing to it. You know, there's just a little something missing, and that was back in force. And it was like, yeah, as you said, this is not a nostalgia tour album, this is not will this do so we can go on tour again.
Yeah.
This was like, here's a new statement from us. I mean, it helped when it came out, it's called Brave New World, it comes out in the year 2000, you know,
right,
everything kind of lined up, the timing was perfect.
And they jumped into the epic songs. I mean, there's one song, the shortest song is 4 minutes, The Fallen Angel. The rest of them, you know, you got a couple of 8 minute songs, 6 minute songs.
The direction is clearly set as to where they're going. It's like, you know what, we're back, we're still Iron Maiden, we can still draw a big crowd, we still sell lots of records, we're going to do whatever we want because we've got the best band back together, and there's not many bands out there that can touch us when we're flying. Okay, well, let's take a listen to some of Brave New World. I'm going to play a little bit of the title track. I'm maybe going to jump in nearer the end just so we can get some of that great chorus that it has. Another good sing-along chorus from the band. So let's take a listen to a bit of Brave New World. I mean, it's all there, isn't it, Mike? It's all there.
It's there. There it is.
You got the gallop. You got the anthemic chorus. You got the multiple lead, now triple lead guitars.
And you got the literature references again.
Yep, it's all there. Yeah, the Aldous Huxley. You got the, but that little guitar figure that begins and ends the song as well. I mean, that's pure Adrian. That is. I mean, that, there's a. You can hear some wasted years in that, can't you? This and that.
Yeah.
You can tell that. Yeah. That, again, it just brings that slight little different little bit of spice and flavour to it. That's not quite as straight ahead as you might have normally had, but yeah, it was a real return to form, and it relaunched them back on into the big time as a big time band that's headlining festivals and playing stadiums and huge arenas and the like. Yes, they didn't rest on their laurels, though, did they, Mike? They I would say they upped their game back in 2003.
Well, they kind of had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's. And they came out with Dance of Death, which I think is a better album than Brave New World, and really sort of cemented the fact that hey, we might be this time in their late 40s, early 50s, but we're a vital band producing vital music, you know, that's fresh and we still want to create, you know, we're not just here just to. Just churn out the hits, you know.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of where they started. They'd done it in the past, but now they're just like, this is what we do. People love us still. We're just going to keep doing this.
Yeah,
and you know, songs like Passchendaele just make you realize, holy cow, this is what Iron Maiden is supposed to be.
Yes, they've reached their final form in some ways, haven't they? They've had different. Goes at stabbed a little bit different directions, but they've realised that actually, okay, they can still do the epic sing along choruses, but you know they want to do these historical epics, these great big long songs. There might be the occasional short song. I mean, we do get Wildest Dreams at 3:52, but that yeah, you know, everything you know, most of the songs are more than 5 minutes. Some of them more than 8 minutes. Yeah,
I'm here for it.
Yeah, we're all here for it, Mike. We're all here for it, mate. So, yeah, it was just a case of it wasn't Brave New World wasn't a fluke. They really are back. They're even better than they were, and yeah, we're back into the run of just high quality albums, but in a slightly different vein. You know, they're longer. You know, overall, I mean. Part of that's a virtue of the fact that you know technology had changed. They weren't putting vinyl wasn't the format of choice at this time. They could go longer. They weren't.
Right, they're not restricted. By
yeah. So you see, whereas if this album had been made in the '80s, it would have been an 8-track album just to fit everything on. You know, now they can go to 11 tracks and just have a bit more. This is probably going to become a bit of a recurring theme as we head into the back end of the career. They just keep churning out the great stuff, you know. It's like a lot of artists of a certain vintage, you know, as is quite well known to some of us. I'm somewhat of a fan of Neil Young, and his quality bar in his later years has been variable, shall we say, to put it mildly. you cannot say that about Iron Maiden, and that certainly since their rebirth with Brave New World, the quality bar is set at a very high level, and I don't think they fail to clear it on any of the releases from that point onwards. Yeah, I don't know whether you do.
Well, I think there's a combination of things happening here too. They've reconciled, you know, with the last album, with Bruce and with Adrian, and they've matured mm-hmm. since. You know, I mean. They've always had a maturity to them from Number of the Beast on in the way they sounded. But coming into this era of the band, they sound like a mature machine,
Yes.
that is just operating on all cylinders. And their subject matter, they're never going to run out of subject matter because they constantly reach into history and mythology and literature. And there's endless supply of that kind of stuff out there. And they're great interpreters of that stuff.
Yeah.
No matter which person in the band is doing the lyric.
Yes, exactly. Whether it's they all contribute writing credits over obviously Steve Harris, you know, and Bruce Maney are probably the main drivers of a lot of it still, but all the guys contribute, and as you say, they don't sit down to write an album based on right. How do I feel today? Let me put my emotions in a song. they sit down to write songs going, what am I interested in today?
Exactly.
Let me write a song about that. And as you said, Mike, on that basis, they're never going to run out of material. And that's what keeps it interesting, because they're not, you know, we don't need to hear My Baby Left Me. Yeah, we've heard that a few times.
Yeah, there's plenty yeah. of that out there.
There's a time and a place for it, and done correctly, it can still be powerful. But it, you know, there's a limited market for that, certainly for you, know, if you've got more of a curiosity in music. So, well, I mean, there's a couple of, well, there's plenty of standout tracks on here, but there's a couple, particularly with the historical references. You've got one figure about a battle around a town in sort of central southern France. But you referenced it earlier, Mike, Passchendaele, about the First World War battle, which was just a complete bloodbath. Well, the whole war was, but particularly Passchendaele was a huge loss of life there. And it's another one of their epics, 8 minutes, 8.5 minute long. So should we take a little listen to a bit of Passchendaele, and then we'll continue on.
In a foreign field he lay, lonely soldier, unknown grave. On his dying words he prays, tell the world of Passchendaele. He's been through last communion of his soul. Rust your bullets with his tears. Let me tell you about his years. Laying low in a blood-filled trench, killing time from a day on death. On my face I can feel the falling rain. Never see my
there it is. That's that. The okay. So that's the formula. Maiden has a formula.
Yes,
but they're not formulaic. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't. If you know their catalog, you know you're gonna get that slow intro, and then they're gonna bust it out. And that's their bread and butter. That's where they've made their bones, and they do it so well that it doesn't come across as formulaic. You know, they don't, you don't see them sitting there, okay, this is how we do our songs, this mm-hmm. this and this. They just do it and it works. And
yes, I think
that's classic Maiden again. They're using the word classic. That song right there is just, even though the intro is just a weird sounding intro.
And that sounds that's like, I say again, that's Adrian all there. That intro, that's an Adrian intro, definitely.
You listen to it, you're like, is that keyboards? Is that guitar? You know, what kind of effects is he using?
I think it might be a bit of both. I think it's a bit of synth going through the guitar, going through the synth, maybe. But yeah, it's there's a couple of things. Yeah, that you say there, Mike. What to pick up on here? I mean, I chose that as my sort of highlight from this album. For the historical content of that song, and also the music matches the subject matter again, because it starts off with, you know, you've got the quiet bit, and it's like, and then suddenly it sounds like an artillery barrage coming in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The drums and the guitars and the bass, like, boom, 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 it's like shells falling on you, and then it goes mm-hmm. back to silence again. It's like the Western Front, you know, the eerie silence, and suddenly this explosion of horror and death, and then, you know, and then back to silence again. It just matches it. It's a perfect match of subject matter to sonic quality with performance added in on that. And it's interesting, yeah, you say about the formula, Mike, and it's really, I think it's instructive to compare them to another bands who've been going slightly longer, but of an equal kind of, maybe probably slightly bigger band worldwide, but AC/DC, and they also have their formula.
Mm-hmm.
And to a similar degree, you can drop the needle on any AC/DC record and it'll sound pretty much the same. You can do that to some degree with Maiden. You're going to get a similar sound on an awful lot of stuff. You know, it's not going to sound radically different for the majority of the albums.
The galloping bass lines, yeah, and the galloping drums.
Yeah, and certainly on the post 2000 albums, they're very much have that, like you say, they're of a piece. But you'd also, you're not going to, it's not the same as dropping the needle on an AC/DC record in some way, because you know, I know what that's going to sound like, and I know what the Iron Maiden's going to sound like, but it won't sound like that for the whole album. It's going to, even for the whole rest of that song, it's going to change multiple times within that song. And yeah, it's a fine line, because we're kind of saying, yes, they're doing the same thing over and over, but we're also saying, but they're not. It's really, we're contradicting ourselves.
Yeah, that's
really
what I'm trying to say. Yes, that's what I was trying to say, yeah.
Yeah, so it might, yeah, do we even know what we're talking? Are we still talking, Mike? Kind of fresh. But, yeah, okay, so any more thoughts on Dance of Death, or should we move on to the next album?
Let's move on to the next one.
Okay, well, Death also features in the title of the next one, which is A Matter of Life and Death, which is another one with an excellent album cover, I think. Probably the one of the, not the best of the reunion album covers, but we're getting back into more classic territory with the tank and the Eddie and the skeletons on the front. But again, this is more of it's kind of a loose concept album, I would say. It's not quite as strongly a concept album as Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, but you know, the some of the familiar themes of conflict and your religion and history and all these sort of things are again predominant throughout. So what's your thoughts on A Matter of Life and Death, Mike?
Well, this one came out. I was fascinated by the logo, that with the Eddie skull with the helmet and the cross guns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, you know, we discussed this off air, but you know, the gun culture, I can easily see that being adopted by gun culture.
Right. Yes.
But when it first was released in 2006, I got that sticker, and
mm-hmm.
I thought it was a really cool icon of the band and where they were at this point. And
yeah.
This album didn't get a whole lot of listens from me. I just kind of revisited it recently, and as you said, it's not the best of the reunion albums, but there's a couple of, you know, classic. There's the word classic again. A couple of good, you know, straight up Maiden type stuff on there. And you know, at an hour plus in length, it's not something you're just gonna, you have to invest in it if you want to listen to the whole thing.
Yes, I mean, we've got a couple of songs over 9 minutes. We've got another three songs that are over 7 minutes. We've got a song that's almost 9 minutes. Yeah, the trend is continuing, and at a certain point, so the dam is going to break. and we'll get to that tomorrow. But is there any particular one here you like, Mike, or to maybe give folks a little taster of A Matter of Life and Death? I know when they toured this, they did the whole album in full on the tour, which I don't think was quite as popular with the fans as it maybe was with the band at the time.
Yeah, I've read some statements from the band about that type of stuff.
I think people would like, you can play some of the new ones, but give us the Trooper 2, please.
Yes.
Or mix it up, you know, don't...
And Bruce is of the opinion that if you don't like it, don't come to the show.
Yes.
Come to the next one.
And, yeah.
Well, you know, that's his right, but...
Yeah. So, yeah, any picks from this one, Mike? Or because I've got one I'll pull out, but I'm happy to defer to one of your choices.
I'm kind of into the reincarnation of Benjamin Bragg.
Nice. Good call. Let's take a little listen to that then.
Of my need to reach the sky, let me take you on an awkward journey. Let me tell you why.
takes a while to get there, but man, it punches in hard when it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I gotta correct myself. I misspoke on the title. It's not Benjamin Bragg. It's Benjamin Brieg.
That's right. Yeah, so I was being too polite to call you out, Mike. But I'm glad you glad you called yourself out there.
I looked at it. I'm like, wait a minute, you dummy.
But I tell you what, listen to that again. You know, that intro part where it starts and it rocks really hard when it comes in.
It's got that classic almost 80s sounding intro riff, you know.
The bass work there from Steve Harris, it really had that Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner feel, you know, which is the epic off of Power Slave. It's just like, you know, there's that long bass part where it just drops down and just the spoken word part. Definitely get those vibes there again from that one. So maybe not quite as good as Dance of Death overall as an album, but again, the quality bar is set very high. You know, you're not going to listen to the album and come and go, well, that was a bit rubbish. You know, this is not No Prayer for the Dying. This is not Virtual 11. This is, this is still highly high quality stuff. It's just, you know, we're measuring in increments now at this point rather than sort of big swings. But before we wrap up today then, Mike, I'll just, are you familiar with the story about, talking of Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, back from when the 80s, I remember hearing Nico interviewed about this, and because it has this long instrumental piece where Steve Harris is doing the bass part, and then there's just a little bit of guitar and spoken word part. So they were playing somewhere hot, some big vent, massive stuff, and so they had a pool backstage. So during this bit, Nico would hop off backstage to dive into the pool to cool off, because obviously he's a drummer. He's getting very warm during the show. And I think it was one stage, he's lying back in the pool chilling out, and suddenly he realises, hang on a minute, I should be playing now. And it's a quick run to the stage, nearly slipping over because he's dripping wet, quickly diving
totally
behind the drum stool.
Yeah,
Steve Harris is turning around going, where are you, man? Slightly extended version. But he's
like the comic relief to the band too, Nico.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard I can't remember what it's called now. It's a beat. They put it out as a B-side. It was him and Nico and Steve Harris having an argument. And then you got Bruce, like, as the stir in the pot, just like throwing in little hand grenades to keep. They were like going at each other about this, that, and the other. And they're back and forth. And then Bruce would be like, what about this? And then, and then it's like absolutely hilarious. I'll have to look that up and try and, I can't remember the name of that now, but it's just this. Basically, a B side of them, Nico and Steve Harris, just arguing.
Some colourful language involved with it.
Yes, it'd be forthright, but So anyway, okay. Well, I think that'll do us for today, Mike. Unless you've got any further thoughts.
I'm good.
No, okay. Well, thanks for listening to us again today. We'll be back tomorrow for the final part of Iron Maiden Week. If you want to contact the show, it's at Suburbs Pod on the socials. You can email the show, rock@suburbspod.com. You can call the Suburban Party Line on 612-440-1984. There we go. There it is. And you can contact me. I'm at Powderfinger71 on Twitter, or Stephen Routledge on Facebook. Mike, you are?
I am at Mike Coley on Twitter. I'm also Mike Coley on Facebook. And check out my website, 315music.com.
Yeah, and... so get in touch. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Iron Maiden and any part of their career, and what you've thought of our discussion this week so far. And we will see you tomorrow for the final part of Iron Maiden Week.
Up the irons.
Up the irons.
No, I know, but he was out of order.
He wasn't out of order.
He was wrong.
He was, because he f***ed me up by trying to tour me.
He'd have come up to the riser. Look, if he'd have come up to the riser there, I could have f***ed him. Standing behind, sitting down.
Yeah, boo.
He was wrong. He made a mistake, but he wasn't out of order.
It wasn't deliberate.
He made a mistake. I didn't know that at the time, right? I still didn't know that Steve had a problem with his bass. Luckily enough, by the time I finished the Poxy solo, he had his bass working again.
All it takes is to get
it was because I bollocked him off, and I had to tell you, you're going, don't bollock him, go and apologise, guy.
Are we still talking, Mike?
I looked at him, I'm like, wait a minute, you dummy.
Yeah.